Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have a fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Tony Cake. Good morning, good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
Yes, I'm okay, thank you. Thanks for the invite.
I'm pleased to have you, and I'm looking forward to this conversation because it's not every day that you know, on podcasts or any sort of content that we really get to engage with people from the world of goalkeeping. So I think it's important that we do that because there's goalkeeping coaches out there as well as goalkeepers. So probably giving a little bit away there, but brief insight around who you are and what you do, just so the listeners are aware.
I'm currently head of academy goalkeeping at Newcastle United, and I'm the national team goalkeeping coach for Northern Ireland for the men's senior team. And they're the current roles I have at the moment. I do a little bit of guest presenting as well, and for the Scottish FA on their UEFA goalkeeping licences. I've been involved with doing that for probably about 7 or 8 years now, from my time working in Scotland as a coach. You know, I got involved in that, and I've continued to do a little bit, even though now I'm back in England working in the game. Yeah.
Awesome. You know, I'm sure there's loads more to kind of unpack around your experiences beyond what you've just shared there, but maybe just a brief insight, you know, what's the journey been like for you? I know you've been an ex-player. Many players do go into coaching, many don't. What was it about coaching that brought you into the space?
I think probably really early. I was, as a young goalkeeper playing, I was at Carlisle in my first 8 or 9 years as a player, and playing in the lower divisions. We didn't always have a goalkeeping coach. And I found myself kind of thrown into those situations quite young, in my early 20s. You know, I can remember taking the sessions, if I could call it that. I was 22, maybe 23 at the time, when managers changed and staff changed. And sometimes the goalkeeping coaches were part-time anyway. They were in a couple of days a week working with the keepers. So they left, and I would be kind of looked upon as the senior goalkeeper because I was the first choice goalkeeper at the time to take the sessions. So there'd be myself, a number two who might be only 19, 20, and then maybe a scholar goalkeeper. So I found myself putting on drills. It wasn't really anything too advanced. It was just things I'd picked up off coaches I'd worked with up to that point. And I think I actually enjoyed the responsibility of it. I actually enjoyed the trying to understand and learn how you would structure a session, and what are we actually working on. I wouldn't have imagined, if I'd had them filmed and looked back at them now, I wouldn't have been too overjoyed with what I saw. But yeah, it was interesting. And then it took me on into later on in my career, and I had a keen interest in the coaching side of the game. The more that I found I had full-time goalkeeping coaches and looked at the detail they went into, and my late 20s, to early 30s, I really started to think about it, because I knew the day would come where you don't play anymore, and I really wanted to stay in the game. I loved the position of goalkeeper. It's all I'd done since I was kind of a kid, and I just wanted it to continue, and coaching's the next best thing. And so I had my first player coach role at 32, and that was out in Vancouver, went to play in Canada. Yeah.
It's quite interesting. You know, you talk about being a young goalkeeper, obviously being in charge of the sessions and whatnot. You mentioned briefly about taking some, you know, some inspiration, if you want to call it that, from some of the goalkeeping coaches you've had in the past. But you just kind of left to your own devices then, because, you know, because I think one of the challenges for coaches, right, is sometimes if they're not getting any feedback, or if they're not getting stretched and challenged around their thinking around what sessions maybe could or should look like, they probably become a bit stagnant and a bit comfortable with what they're doing. So I mean, when you think back about it now, do you feel like that maybe you missed out in having to take responsibility to sessions and not necessarily be on the receiving end of some, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I do. I think also, when I reflect back and think of the coaches I had, even at that young age, you know, I'd had Mervyn Day had been at the club, I'd had Henry Smith, who'd been at Hearts for many years as a goalkeeper, then I had Simon Smith, who was a big game changer for myself. He came in and was a real technical coach. And that's probably what I really needed at that point in time. You know, I was kind of flying around the goal and doing my thing, but there wasn't any control in what I was doing. And I think when I reflect back to when I did do those, started doing sessions as a young player with the other goalkeepers, I think I probably looked at all the coaches I had to that point and tried to take a little pieces of what they did. And I think Simon had a huge impact on me, because I was very technical based. It was much easier to put on that kind of session as well, I must say. But the actual outcomes that I got from those sessions, I felt was really beneficial to me and the other goalkeepers. You're right, there wasn't anybody there kind of looking in and checking in. It wasn't that kind of environment back in the kind of early 90s to mid 90s. It was very much coaches just kind of got on with it. And I think also when goalkeeping coaches were brought into a club at that time, it was still fairly new, having a specialist in with it. So the other coaches and other staff didn't get too involved, because they would probably make the comment, well, I don't really know what I'm looking at, so I'll stay away from it. And they left them to it. And that's why it kind of became that you were over in the corner somewhere doing a bit of work, and then you got a shout and you were needed to join in with the players for whatever it was they needed you for. And which has definitely changed. It's really moved on, and for the better, I might add as well. So it's something that, looking back, I was replicating things I'd picked up. You know, I did used to jot little sessions down, basically matchstick men, just a pen and paper, a pad and paper after training. And I knew quite early, even at that point, what were we doing, why were we doing it, was kind of coming into my mind. And that did kind of link into me Saturdays as playing. And I was actually at a reunion on Friday of a few players, and we were at a charity golf day on Friday where I visited, and a lot of players I played with at that time, we were all there, and we were chatting about how the game's changed. And one thing that I talked about was, I remember they used to show the Football League highlights on a Tuesday night, and it was on at like 1 or 2 in the morning, something like this. And I used to record it on VHS, set the timer on the video and record it. Now, that was my way of finding out about other players. So I would be watching strikers. So on a Wednesday, come home after training, put it on, and I'd be able to watch the goalkeepers, the strikers doing their finishing and how they did the things, and then try to pick up my little pieces of information based off that. Yeah.
It's quite interesting that, because, you know, one of the things that we, as you said, you know, things have moved on massively since back then. Goalkeepers are definitely probably more intention around integrating them. I don't know how well they're doing it, because obviously every environment is different. I think different coaches have different kind of, I guess, intentions around how well they do it. But something that was quite interesting about what you said there was that, never mind the fact that you brought back VHSs, but you use that as an opportunity to observe other players. Now, what was it, you know, what was it for you that actually inspired you to actually even begin thinking on that wavelength, that I need to go out and get this information? Because that's not an everyday thing that necessarily a player just comes up with, is it? I think some players, maybe for yourself, it was just about, how do I develop further? And, you know, it's in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, how much of that is then influenced by the fact that there was no coach present?
Did you feel like you had to take it on your own shoulders and actually go out and do more work in relation to that? And, you know, if there's any coaches listening to this, or even goalkeepers or young players generally, you know, what would be your advice to them in terms of, right, the importance of that and how they can go about doing it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's really important. And look, in the modern game, in today's game, it's at your fingertips and it's instant. You can find information instantly, and you can discuss things to, you know, the ninth degree, and how we might go about, you know, stopping things or a build up, how we might play out because of the pattern. But back then it was really, unless I went and sourced that and found that myself, and I wouldn't have actually known what I was going to come up against. I would have learned over time, because I would have played against players on a regular basis, against the team. So I'd start to figure out what kind of strikers they are, what kind of wingers they are, what's the finish, what are they trying to look to do. If they're in a 1v1, I'd probably learn the hard way, because they'd be probably through and they'd score. And I think, right, he's done that because of this. And I think that's why I tried to look. I was almost looking for trends. I didn't realise I was doing it at the time, but I was looking for trends because I used to make notes on what I saw. So I would refer to those notes when I played that team. And then once the team came in and the team sheet came in and I saw they were playing, I could go back and look at these notes. My advice to young coaches or even young players is that it's very easy to expect other people to find this for you. But I think it'll definitely have more impact if you go and find it yourself and use it yourself.
I think you're spot on, and again, it takes me to my next question. I was going to ask you is that you mentioned there about, you know, maybe not consciously, but what you were doing is trying to identify trends. In my role as a coach developer, I think is one of the challenges for coaches is observing and really observing to see specifics, see what to notice things. Where does one start with that? Because I think it is quite a challenge, especially if you have got no hints or ideas or where to kind of initially point your attention to. Like if a coach or a player picks up a clip now, often they're just looking at what's happening in the game, or like you said, you know, has it gone in as opposed to how has it gone in? Where would you begin with that process if you had to start over?
It's a good question. When you really strip it back, I think I think there's two ways of looking at it. I think there's, you know, when you have a conversation with a player, and you're talking about, it's the same experience. They've lived the experience, you've watched the experience. So something's happened in the game. And the conversation will begin with, you would open it up with, what did you think of? So you want to get their interpretation of what's actually just happened. Mm. When you open up with that, sometimes the actual response can kind of knock you because you've seen it in such one way that they don't give you that response. And then you've got to try and navigate it back towards that. But it also sets a seed of doubt in you as the coach, because did it really happen that way then? Because they've seen it differently, so differently. With the goalkeeping, I tend to find it's quite close most of the time, but every now and again you get a reaction that just is not what you were expecting. And I think that for yourself as a coach, your awareness of what they've just said is really key to how you take that next step in the conversation, and having a pause. I think pausing and trying to think a little for a second, right? Okay, am I 100% sure that I've saw it? That yes, I am. Okay, how do I bring it to that to make them aware of it? I'm not saying they're wrong and I'm right, but I've got to make you aware of what I've seen.
It's just two different perceptions, isn't it? And as you're speaking, the reason I'm smiling is because it reminds me of a phrase that I've been using with coaches recently, and it's, are you observing the game through your eyes or their experience? Because their experience is completely different, right? It's perceptions, and at the end of the day, they've seen something that we might not have seen, and vice versa. So, you know, sometimes as a coach from the sides, you know, especially on a match day, obviously training is slightly different because you could be anywhere you want, really, but you're seeing something from your vantage points. You're not taking in necessarily the same considerations they are. And the thing is, even if you are taking the same considerations, the value or the impact of those considerations might be very different to how you perceive them based on that.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, because like you know, I follow quite a similar approach. The first thing I'm thinking, well, what did you notice? What did you see? What are your thoughts? Really just to kind of gather that, because it might, you know, I quickly might realize that I don't actually need to say anything here.
Yeah.
They've already assessed what's happened. Or their rationale for the decision that they've made is completely valid based on what they saw and felt. And it's not sometimes about correcting the players, and sometimes just reaffirming, all right, well done, a great decision. And then it kind of puts me on like a bit of a flow chart, or where I say, right, the coach's role, you're either going to intervene for something that is correction or something that is praise and reinforcement. But it's often a technical or a tactical one. Mm. So it's, right, let's explore it. What was their perception? What was the decision they made? Do I agree with the decision? Not because it's wrong or right, but because, do I agree with it in the sense of, doesn't have to be what I would have done, but does their rationale make sense around why they've made that decision? Oh, brilliant. I agree with that. Their rationale stands up. Now, if it hasn't gone in the way we wanted it to, it's probably going to be a technical intervention.
Yeah.
As opposed to the tactical intervention. I don't know if you follow a similar kind of process or what the processes might be.
Yes, because it'll be, I mean, even though in goalkeeping there's the tactical elements where the ball's in certain areas of the pitch, and then once it becomes into that close to goal, then it's a positional element, and it's a technical execution of a certain technique or skill. And I think that it's the conversations, it's interesting when I speak to coaches, and they'll have talk about a goal conceded, and it's usually about a goal conceded. It's a pretty predominantly, it's not always, but most of it. And they'll talk about, should he save it? And the viewpoint of most is from pitch side, or maybe if you sit up in a seat in a stand, you've got that view, elevated view. But what you don't have is the view of the goalkeeper. And, you know, a position in where there may be a step too far to the left or the right, or and they're trying to see the ball, is because they've got a view obstructed by a defender and a forward that's, you know, in front of the defender. And all these things come into play. So that's why I think it's really important, when especially in game situations or game scenarios, that you ask the question of, what did you see? You know, and that's something that, I think it's something I learned to ask over time, because I probably got it wrong quite a lot early on as a coach, talking, saying, you know, I think you should save that. Where should, you know, I think you got to get. And like, I'm already putting the answers into the question, and that doesn't give the goalkeeper anywhere to go, because the goalkeeper's then thinking, oh, well, it must be that, rather than, was it that? And then, because I could get a response of, yeah, look, I felt I had more time there, or I was just slightly deep, and I hadn't probably even noticed the depth at that point. But when I reflect back, yeah, he was touch deep. He's giving me the reason why he was there, and they were there, and why the outcome wasn't what it was. I think the it's interesting from when you sit with coaches and discuss, and I know I'm talking goalkeepers, you know, sit and talk about goalkeepers, and it's, again, going back, it's quite simplistic, the view of why something happened. And then, you know, what we've got better at, I don't think we're completely there yet, is that when it is the reasons are given, or why this could have happened, they're not excuses. It feels like they would be given as an excuse of why that happened. It's not an excuse, it's reasons, and legitimate reasons. And those are the conversations that we probably need to get a little bit better. I think, I mean, some of the staff I work with are really good at it. And I think that probably helps with the fact that I'm prepared to have an up. But I also warn back goalkeepers to the point where it's of the ridiculous, where like, no, it's not their fault. You know, you can't back, you know, the mistakes happen. It's a part of the learning. It's a part of the development. If they don't make mistakes, then we don't have anything to look through and try and help them with, to get better with. And then it can become a major strength as well in time.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting, because like you say, there is often, you know, like I said, the gravitation towards, right, something's gone wrong, rather than sometimes just appreciating, actually, do you know, the centre forward's just done really well.
Yeah.
It's just done really well. Like, you could, there's like, you know, we could sit here and we can nitpick around all the technical stuff around it, but actually, it's just done really well, and you're not going to save everything, right? But do you ever find conflict within yourself sometimes around, you know, what you think the goalkeeper should have done and how they maybe approach it? Because, you know, I'm thinking about past experiences I've had where there might be certain techniques I want them players to adopt, but actually it's just not suited for that type of individual. You know, they you know, whether it's because of the physicality, the frame that they've got, or you know, even the background they have and the cultural influences they have around what coaching might have been looking like in their environments or what they've been exposed to from that standpoint. Do you ever find yourselves in a conflict like that?
Yeah, I think I look at goalkeeping and there's I've got a lot of strong influences back from when I played, obviously, and you've evolved and the game has evolved. So there's the certain styles of goalkeeper has changed. The profile of goalkeepers have changed throughout that time. You know, I was playing in the first team when the pass back rule came in, where you couldn't pick it up. So I had chance to adapt because I was only young. I was 19. But I've seen a lot of goalkeepers late 20s, early 30s really struggle. And like, you know, they'd never. So the game evolved so quickly. I think I've probably found myself over the last kind of 5-10 years looking at how the physical shape of a goalkeeper has changed and the actual saving shapes we're trying to get them into. So the actual physical requirements have changed. And so we talk about profiles of height, but the flexibility elements, how dynamic they are in their movements, how brave they are at defending space, how quickly can they sprint forwards, how quickly can they recover in backward movements. These are things that I would have probably not considered 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It would have been in goal action. Now we're really having to focus on this because you can prevent things before they become something. That's what we're trying to do. Prevention's better than cure. And I think that I would probably say the 1v1 and the saving elements, the saving shapes to this, and I'm not scared to say it. I look at that and think I was taught a certain way. And I think back to some of the goals I conceded now and think if I'd been taught a different way, I might have been a bit more successful in those situations to what we're teaching now. And I think we've got some coaches who've been brought up through that, through their age. You know, they're now mid-20s and they're into the 30s. So they've had this upbringing through this, where I didn't have this upbringing. I haven't lived that scenario. I'm theoretically trying to coach it. These guys have lived it and they're now coaching it. That gives them a strong advantage on that. So when it becomes to the 1v1 situation, we have coaches that are, I would say, better than me at coaching that because they've got real feel in it. I haven't got feel in it. I understand where, so the distances and the technical elements I can coach, but I don't know how it really feels. And I think that's quite important because they could look at a goalkeeper and go, he doesn't feel right trying to make that save that way. Where I would be trying to coach that and say, no, I think you've got to try and, but he'd be probably a bit reluctant to say to me, well, sure, I feel comfortable, you know, where, yeah.
Do you know what? It's really interesting. Again, you've got my mind really frazzled right now because I'm going to go in a few different directions, but I'm going to try and align my thoughts. First thing you mentioned there about the goalkeeper feeling comfortable what you're asking him to do. And I think this applies for outfield players as well. And the question I always kind of preface it when I go into a session with goalkeepers in particular, more so because I think goalkeeping is probably a lot more technical than it would be with the outfield players just because there's so many moving parts, right? But question I asked him is, right, if you're, well, one thing I wanted to pay attention to more than anything is actually, if you're feeling uncomfortable, the question you need to ask yourself is this. Is it uncomfortable because it's new to you or because it just doesn't feel right? Because I think there's two very different things there. I think, you know, if it is new, it's going to feel uncomfortable. But like you talked about there, you know, the flexibility, the physical shapes and all the other stuff that comes into play when we're talking about goalkeeping in particular. Actually, there's just some shapes that some people ain't going to get into. We have to accept that, right? We're not all as flexible as gymnasts, so that's going to affect our technique. Now, you know, it goes back to that point again. Are you uncomfortable because it's not right for you, or are you uncomfortable because this is new to you? So I think that's, you know, that's one piece. But then something you were speaking about was about, you know, just working with the players and understanding them and understanding, you know, the goalkeeping actions and the in goal actions. It made me think, if that's where a lot of goalkeepers are at mentally, or goalkeeping coaches are at mentally, is there not a greater demand for goalkeeping coaches for them? And I know this has changed over the years, but a greater demand for goalkeeping coaches to really embed themselves in understanding the game too. Because I've come across so many goalkeeping coaches. And I deliver on the national goalkeeping certificate for the FA.
Yeah.
And one of the things that often comes up is goalkeeping coaches wanting to go straight up through to the B and the A goalkeeping licenses. And it's like, it's changed slightly in comparison to what it was maybe 10, 15 years ago, where you maybe needed to have the outfield to then move across. But I feel like there's now more of a reluctance from goalkeeping coaches to even consider going across. It's like, well, I just want to be a goalkeeping coach.
Mm.
I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think look, it's the mindset has changed. I think it's changing. It's not completely there, like you've alluded to there. There's still some goalkeeping coaches out there that feel that working across, working on some technical or maybe a little bit of tactical game related scenarios is their role. I think that's your area of expertise. I think that should still always be the area of expertise. But I agree with you that you need a strong understanding of what the game looks like. So if because I think it'd be quite daunting for a goalkeeping coach to think about the whole game. If they were to think about how everything works tactically within an 11v11 structure.
Surely that has a knock-on effect to the goalkeeper, right?
Of course it is, yes. And then I would say the next step, how would you bridge that in? How would you put the blocks in? Well, if you strip it right back and you put the pitch into thirds, well, the defensive third, in possession and out of possession, those are key areas you need to understand. So if what is your team? What shape is your team? What's your defensive shape look like? So what does that look like in possession and out of possession? So in possession, if it's built from a goal kick or build in general play or in open play, or is it defensively, where is the threats going to come from the opposition? So having that understanding and being able to reload that through analysis and then onto the pitch with the goalkeepers, which is common practice now. I think once we get to the mid third and the top half of the top third of the pitch, I think it's good for them to understand and to know, but I don't think they need to know everything on those elements, because I think then that if they're trying to understand everything about the goalkeepers and the defensive third and the midfield, then it can detract a little bit from their speciality and their specialisation, which is goalkeeper, defensive unit, midfield players. The other players will naturally come into that, because if it's a build and we're trying to take them one way to play another way, and a midfield, a wide player rolls in, or a centre forward comes off the front, or he goes in, whatever it might be, they're naturally going to come into play, but they only need to know that one part, I think. Mm. I think then the coaches, the assistant coaches and things can then start to really dig deep into those movements and the timing of those movements. Mm. But I agree, the goalkeeping coaches need to have a wider understanding of the game, whether that be team shapes, responsibilities, principles. And you have to immerse yourself in it with coaches. So something we talk about at Newcastle is the foundation phase lead goalkeeping coach and the youth development phase lead goalkeeping coach are based in the office with all the staff. So there's a large group of staff. So their conversations are constant around training, about games. What are we going into? Why are we going into this? And we are, you know, as a staff, I try to promote, look, guys, if you don't have the information off the coaches, because they've got a lot to plan and a lot to think about and squads and numbers, and go and ask, go and get immersed, go and find out the information that's key for you for tonight or for this afternoon or for whatever it might be, because it might just have slipped their mind. And I think going through the coaching licenses will give them the confidence to go and ask the questions, because if you ask a question, it can open up a conversation and a question might come back. So if the question comes back, you need to have the knowledge to be able to engage and say, oh, right, okay, well, have you thought of this? And in a respectful way, have you thought of this? Ah, right, okay, that might be something to look at. Because I think sometimes with the outfield coaches as well, they look at the goalkeeper and think, I don't really know what to say or do there. You know, so that's your domain. But the reality is, the goalkeeper plays for us all.
Yeah.
and the players play for us.
I think you're spot on. Yeah. The one thing I always go back to, I remember when, I mean, when I started my journey, very early on, I got to a point where I was thinking to myself, I've done my level one, done my youth awards. I'm waiting to come on, waiting to do the B license. Let me go and do my goalkeeping level two. And my only thought process was, look, I want to be able to impact everyone in the team. Let me learn more about it. I think one of the challenges when you go on a goalkeeper is they think, oh, you're a goalkeeping coach. No, I'm just a football coach. Like you said, they play for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's probably the only position on the pitch that we would be struggling to get the game started without one. We'll lose our heads, right? Yeah. But it's the one that gets the least attention sometimes. And I think there is that danger, and I see it firsthand, and I'm not sure if you've got any experiences similar to this, but there is that danger where you think someone is a goalkeeping coach in the environment, so they just get left to it.
Okay.
Now what happens is that goalkeeping coach, because they don't necessarily have the knowledge of what's happening in the game and the outfield side of stuff, what they're doing doesn't actually correlate with what's actually happening over here. So then they're given all these messages, which then I think there's a real danger of causing confusion for the goalkeeper, because the outfield coach might be telling them one thing and how they engage within the team. Goalkeeping coach is saying something which contradicts that for a different reason. So there is that, you know, there is that middle ground that they need to kind of come to. And I think it then gets me thinking, is there a reason why we don't see more people with goalkeeping backgrounds go into senior management roles or head coaches roles, because they're so fixated on what is happening in between the sticks, if that makes sense?
Yeah. There probably is an element of that. A couple of things there you were saying. I think the when the goalkeeping coaches are trying to understand the game and trying to understand what the principles are, and then go away and do their own session and then come back, they'll be fixated a lot of the time on just what they want to do with the goalkeepers and not really be linking it as such. I think the skill of the coach is to be able to think of what your theme is, think about if you've got some IDPs incorporated into there, and think about how you can lead the session, tell the story right to the main session. So when they get to the main session, the goalkeepers have had everything they need, but the final part would be what they're going to experience with the players. So when they walk into that part of the session, it isn't completely new. So for example, if it was a build-up element that you were going to work on as a team or a unit, then you don't need to be doing reaction saves as your last drill before you come across. There needs to be an element of transitional play out or that can lead into some form of save, but you've got actually some element of what's going to be needed when they come in with the players. So the coach or the lead coach brings the goalkeeper in, right, we set up, this is the structure, this is what I'm looking for, right, boom. The goalkeeper's like, okay, yeah. So as the goalkeeping coach, you can actually use your goalkeepers if you're fortunate to have enough in your group, and including yourself as the coach, and using some mannequins or different things, you can actually create some of the patterns or the things that, and actually explain to the goalkeepers, look, this will be what you go into next. So you've actually planted the seed. When you go into this part in 5 minutes, this is what you'll experience. And then you can take it close to the game. And, I see a lot of coaching out there at the moment. There's a lot of random coaching goes on in goalkeeping. I think there's lots of there's multi-goals and there's this and that and the other. And I'm thinking, right, okay, I mean, as a goalkeeper and I'm going to play in a game, the first thing I need to be calm and I need to be in control. And I don't think a lot of those sessions give me the calmness and control I need. I think what it gives, it'll give me lots of action. It'll be really enjoyable. So I'm not saying there isn't a place for that sometimes. Mm-hmm. There is a place for it, definitely. But if we're going to create a goalkeeper that's tactically aware, understanding, because they need to build their game understanding. So that has to come through the coach. The coach has to build their understanding of what's needed, what the principles are, into the goalkeeper. So the goalkeeper can then go and display this in a pressurized environment. If we don't give them it in a training environment, we can't expect it in a game environment. And if all we give them is randomness in a training, what are we going to get in a game? We're going to get randomness. So yeah. I think we've got to be really careful as coaches that we don't just put things on because they look good. We've got to put things on what's the reason for this, the start point and the planning. And I think what you said earlier about the goalkeeping coaches doing their own thing. They need to find the information. They need to be confident enough with their knowledge to go and speak to the coaches, find out, immerse themselves in the conversation and the planning element and be a part of the planning. Yes, I won't be with you for the first 20 minutes, but then I'll be across with you. So then how do you use me and utilize me when I'm in the session? So am I just stood there at the side behind the goal with my arms folded, or am I actually, you know, am I taking up a position on the edge of the 18-yard box to get that viewpoint from the side of the pitch? And have I got license to actually quietly coach a defensive player, a goalkeeper, a midfield player? Have I got license to do that, Bill? But that'll only come by you showing you've got some knowledge.
Yes.
And you're saying the same things.
Yeah.
So you're bedding in the same principles.
100%. Yeah. You remind me of an experience I had several years ago. Again, I was head of academy goalkeeper myself, and one of the comments from the academy manager at the time was, we need the goalkeepers to be better in possession. And I said to them, well, they're never with the group. Never with the group. So you know, the relationships aren't there, the trust isn't there. It was a challenging conversation, but I think it was one that, you know, needed to be. I said, well, if you're now going to judge me on that, you need to give me the platform. I need to do that. You know, and one step at a time. It started off by initially just working with the subs or working with the players maybe that are coming back from injury, just to kind of do it there. And, you know, as with anything, you know, you bite off a little bit and you keep biting until you can get no more bite. And I eventually got to a point where it was like, right, we could see what's happening. We could see the development, right? Right, well, can I do it with the actual players that are going to be working now? Because that's going to be key, because there's no point in you working with so-and-so over here when they're not the players you're going to be working with on match day. And again, it comes back to what you said, and having that credibility and that piece where the coaches can turn around and say, actually, yeah, he knows what he's talking about. And I think that's where, you know, I mentioned the earlier comment about goalkeeping coaches having to maybe go out there and do that extra work to find out, well, how does he actually fit into the team? How does she fit into the team?
Yeah.
What does that look like? And I think one of the challenges I give to outfield coaches sometimes when you're working with a goalkeeper, okay, fair enough, you might not be well-versed in the stuff they're doing out of possession in terms of the hand shapes and the body in and the barriers and all the other stuff that comes with it, but surely you can support them in possession at least.
Absolutely.
Even if it is just technical, how to strike a ball, you know, getting it at different distances, different heights and all the other stuff that comes with it. Like, there is things that you can do if you're an outfield coach who doesn't feel that confident with goalkeeping that you could still help them with, which is the same stuff that you potentially should or could be doing with your outfield players. At the end of the day, and I love the way that you constantly refer to them as players, because they are. That's exactly what they are. The goalkeepers are just another player on the pitch. And I think if we look at it through that lens, then we should be hopefully more willing and supportive in appreciating that we can actually add value there as well. But I think one of the key things that have come from everything that you said, and that I'm just listening, and it's just a word that just keeps buzzing out in my head, is everything is deliberate. Like, everything that you're doing is about deliberate action to help the goalkeepers develop, even if it comes back to the practice itself and understanding that, like you said, all of that stuff, there might be some fun exercise they can do, fun practice they can do, but context tells us what we can do fundamentally. Have we got the resources for this? Have we got the resources for that? How much time do we have with our players? Obviously, in your context, you might have 3 or 4 sessions a week with some of your players. But, you know, if there's a grassroots coach listening to this, it becomes even more important to do the stuff that's not just fun, but impactful on match day. So are you creating game-like moments for them to have to respond to? And one thing I always go back to around practice design in particular is, if you're a coach putting on a session for the players, players are making decisions based on certain things. Now, if those things are not presented to them in the same way they are on a match day within their sessions, they're probably not going to be making game-like decisions. They're making decisions based on other variables. I don't know what your thoughts are, and I've gone on off a bit of a tangent, but I think there's a few things in there just for hopefully people to think about.
The scenarios or the situations that you're going to put into the day-to-day, or even, like you say, talk about a grassroots coach who's working with boys or girls and thinking what's important at this, what's important. It's about ciphering through it all and finding, right, this is the bit that we really need to work on now. It's become that repetition has become something that it's being labelled as boring now. We can't, repetition doesn't, it doesn't stimulate enough. It doesn't, but if the, you've got to place some high value on that, and how you put high value on that, in my experience, would be you talk about, or if you're fortunate to be able to show the scenarios in a game of where how the value is so high. So this is why we need to work at this. If we can get this part right, that is going to help you and the team to unbelievable heights. And I strip it back, another sport, okay, I look at golfers and I think of how they must prepare and plan, going to a driving range, hitting 500 balls, hitting so many different kinds of shots. But they will have, like you say, so many clubs in a bag. They're the only clubs they're going to use. So I'm going to hit the ball slightly different in certain conditions, depending on the club, the conditions, where the green is, the pin. Think of football, and I think the goalkeeping, so I think in players, in general, is that you take the game, you go back to what does the game demand from you in your position? What does the manager and the team want from you, right, to make the team successful? If it's development, we are developing you, the individual. How do we take you to get you closer as you come through to our first team? What does the first team demand? So that's the star in the sky. How are we going to get you there? And we've got to build it in. And if we don't recognize certain parts that aren't functioning as well, we are doing the player a disservice. And deliberate repetitional practice is probably the best and only way we can take it to a point where they'll feel confident to use it in a pressurized environment. I remember Simon, I'm going off on a tangent, Simon, when I was a young goalkeeper and I was early 20s, playing in the first team in the Football League. And the best way I had to describe myself, I was just all energy. I was like, boom, 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 I want to do it. And then he'd be like, basically Simon came in he didn't even really have a conversation with me. Just his calm demeanor really affected me positively, because sessions were controlled. And when we came to games or when a match day warm-up, it was so controlled. It was like almost relaxed. I didn't have to do an hour of finishing and an hour of crosses and do, like, it felt like I'd done a training session, basically. He warm up nice and controlled, nice and methodical, working through areas of the goal, doing your passing, clipping to fullbacks, clipping to wide player, hitting the nine, your side foot in the six, whatever it might be. And it was all methodic. So when the game come and it opened, it was there, and the technique was there, and I could play it under pressure. And I asked him about it later on, because I had him twice at Carlisle and Newcastle as a player, but I was at different ages. I'd gone from being a 20-year-old to a 30-year-old. And at 30-year-old, I asked the question, what's the thoughts and the reasoning behind it? And he said, for your technique and that skill to hold up in a pressurized environment, it doesn't just happen because you think about it. And we talk about it, you have to do it. So all those times you can rely on it to work for you. You need the confidence for it to work and rely. I'm like, yeah, I get you. Now then, I understand that if you just did sessions that were very like that all the time, the goalkeeper wouldn't be stimulated all the time. There would come a point they would plateau or they'll fall away. I get that. So it's finding, right, when do you hit them with that when you work with them? I'm still a believer you hit them at the beginning. You've got to hit them at the beginning because they're most attentive. They're at the start of the session. But where maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I could have stayed in that kind of zone for 45 minutes. That zone's maybe now 15, 20 minutes. Mm. And I think I look at young goalkeepers, young players, how things have changed for them.
Mm.
Probably needs to move on. So it's now my skill as the coach to take, how can I keep the technical repetition going where it becomes more stimulated? So there is more moving ball practice, but I'm still really looking at the technique of a certain technique. And I think that's the key to that, taking it by keeping it in the sessions and keeping it prevalent and relevant now, but also taking it to a place where the goalkeepers feel stimulated.
It's interesting that, because again, I'm a remember about my experience when working with goalkeepers, and I often question some of them. They would like to do certain exercises, certain practices, or certain work through certain things, and I always had me question, why why do you want to do that? What makes you feel like that is what you want to do? And again, it was just curiosity at the time. But and then it started to get me thinking, well, how much of that was influenced by the goalkeeping coaches or where they've been before? Because one of the challenges or one of the questions I often get asked, especially when I'm delivering courses, is, what should a warm-up look like? And then I just think back to this one experience, and I've got these two goalkeepers. One of them was like, he wanted it high intensity, 25 minutes, that's it.
Okay.
The other one, he wanted it 45 minutes long, and it's like, it's a bit lengthy, but if that's what works for you. But his 45 minutes was very structured, very slow, step by step. We need to do this, then we need to move to this, then we need to move to this. Yeah. And whatever happens, we need to finish on about 5 to 10 goal kicks.
Mm.
And like, he was just so methodical about it. And again, it just because I like to challenge thinking sometimes. We had a really good conversation. It was around, why these things? Why these moments? Why in this order for you? And in the end of it, it came down to, well, this is all I know. I don't know anything. I don't know any other thing. So I guess it's part of knowing what you know and making sure you feel comfortable in what you know. And that's what prepares him. Whereas the other one, he was just buzzing. He must have had a pre-workout before every warm-up or something. He's come out, he's just buzzing. He just wants that 25 minutes just smashing.
Yeah.
And you know, then you get the other goalkeepers. I remember another one is like, I don't want to take any shots in a warm-up.
Yeah.
I don't want to take any shots in a warm-up.
That's the fear of conceding.
Yeah, more, I think more psychologically, because I think that, and that's the challenge sometimes. I've had to challenge for coaches sometimes when I'm working in teams, and even conscious of it myself when I'm running teams, I don't want to batter that goalkeeper mentally. Yeah. And it was interesting. Went to watch a game recently. They had the Unity Cup in London where it had Nigeria, Ghana, Jamaica, and Trinidad. So I went to watch a Jamaican Trinidad game, and I was like smack bang right in front, right behind the goal. And I just at the warm up, I just got interested in just watching the goalkeeping warm up.
Yeah.
And it was not, as soon as anything came in that was considered opposed, if you like, the starting goalkeeper took himself out of it.
Right.
I don't know whether that was, I would like to think it was conscious based on how it was happening. Mm. But I don't know how much of that was then discussed prior with maybe the second goalkeeper or even the goalkeeping coach, because every time it happened, like, the look on the face of the secondary goalkeeper was almost like, again, you're throwing me in the deep end again. So I don't know how much discussion, but it was really interesting to observe. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, if you've had any similar experiences.
I think with a couple of things there is, you know, you're talking about this. I think that you said psychological. I think where we'll probably go in the future, I'm thinking of senior goalkeepers, when you recruit and senior goalkeepers, the psychological probably traits that they produce will be a big factor in how you recruit, because you've just talked there about two extremes. If you have two young goalkeepers, you can cope with that because of their age, but if it was just two senior goalkeepers, it can lead to conflict and maybe some issues if they're too different. You know, I've had experiences of that. So you're having to manage the situation as much as you're being a coach. I think when you talk there, going to watch Jamaica and that when the other goalkeeper kept stepping in for the opposed stuff, so invariably it's concede more difficult, more stressful. The other guy's like, well, I've got to play in 10 minutes, so I'm just taking myself out of that. Conscious decision, don't want that. That's going to affect me negatively. The other guy's like, well, why am I having to do this? You know, so that clear, like, who's the number one, who's the number two? Those conversations probably, I'm working in international football at the moment. We have a really good group and strong group of goalkeepers to choose from. And when they're in squad, they're all really good together. But they're all fighting to play. But towards game time, it's made, you know, quite clear who's going to start the game. So then it gives the other goalkeepers a chance to get their head together and have any conversations they might need with myself or whoever. And then they can be positive on match day, because that's important, especially when you're in international football and you're in a confined space for 10 days. I think that goalkeepers not wanting certain things, or I want a certain warm up or a certain, you know, style of what we do, really impactful, da, 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 or I don't want, I just want this and I want to do this one, this. It's like comfort blanket. I mean, and as you were talking, I wrote, that was me. That was me. If I didn't do six of this and six of that and eight of this and nine of that, I could be, by the time 3 o'clock came, I'd be sitting thinking about that rather than thinking about, we've got a game in 2 minutes. And so as I got older, I got better, definitely got better, where warm-ups became less important. It just became, you know, try to think about what it is. It's a warm-up. I might need more of one thing today than another thing,
yeah,
depending on how I feel. Getting away from that, because the young goalkeepers, we try to guide them with warm-up, and there's been times we've got the games, there's been times they're late, so they don't have too long to warm up. That's fine, no problem. You know, just we'll do this, this and this, and you'll be fine. You know, you take the stress, take the heat out of the situation, you know. You're going to kick off at the same time regardless, so there's no point in stressing about the fact you haven't had a chance to do everything that you normally do. Because I sometimes think it's too much anyway. I think they've played the game in their head. They've had so much video. They've had so much prep. Then they come to the game, and like kickoff comes, I'm almost like, I'm actually sitting and thinking, I don't know if I would have coped if I was playing now, because I'd have had so much information. I'm not sure what I'd be doing with it. But I understand the goalkeeper of today has grew up with this. So there's an element of them needing that. And that is their comfort blanket. My comfort blanket was extra reps on the pitch. Theirs is, well, I've seen the analysis. I know what the striker does. I know what he does. I know what they do. This is what they do on set plays. Where I was kind of in the dark a little bit with it all. And it just...
It's quite interesting. Yeah. I remember even going back to my own experience when I'm working with those two goalkeepers, I said that, you know, one of them is 25, one of them is 40. So the only two things I kind of said, right, we're going to do this, regardless of what you want, is almost, if you like, a generic kind of dynamic warm-up. But then within that, I kind of catered and, you know, fit some time in for like them as an individual. So like, you know, let's go through what we would do as a collective, because I think that aids especially the psych and social parts for them, because there's some consistency there, but there's also that element of we're in this together, the two goalkeepers. And I think that piece is really important for me. But then fitting that time in for them as individuals, like, you know, you might be one of the goalkeepers there, and you might have tighter hamstrings than him who's got tight quads or whatever it might be. So just allowing them to have that free roaming time and within that. And then one of the things I was dead set on, and I made a real point of this, was when the outfield players are doing their stuff, whether it be the small possession practices or, you know, whatever it is, keep ball type practices before the start of the game, goalkeepers have to be in that. Goalkeepers had to be in it for me, because I think over, you know, when the academy manager challenged me at the time, I was like, oh, we need the goalkeepers to be better at this. I said, well, if you're going to judge me on this, this is what I think we need to have in place to make that happen. And that was one of the things I kind of, you know, really fought for. They have to be involved in those practices. And then, you know, even on in a week, obviously I'm working with the A-teams at the time, so obviously they're in full time.
Yeah.
And one day in that week, I think it was a Thursday, the academy manager used to make it heavily possession based practices on a Thursday. And literally, rather than taking the keepers away for 30-40 minutes and doing some bits with them, I said, no, they've got to be involved in all of that. They've got to be involved in that stuff. Again, from a technical standpoint, and just being comfortable with the ball at their feet and moving around. But the social element, and again, going back to what I said earlier about developing those relationships, building trust, the players are starting to recognize, actually, Tony needs it like this, Yas needs it like that. Because if they don't get to experience that in training, they give me a wrong pass on match day. Based on not knowing how well I maybe am on this side or this side, or just having an assumption that I should be able to deal with it, that changes things. It's just got me really thinking about that piece of individuality and supporting the individual and developing the individual, rather than this is how we're going to do it, one size fits all approach, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's as you're talking there, it's took me back to, I'd, a couple of years ago, were fortunate to visit Ajax, and we, you know, a couple of guys I know there, and it was like, come in and have a look, see what we do. And I went to Feyenoord, a couple of Dutch clubs, and obviously Dutch are renowned for development of players. They've got their style, they're doing it very similar in a lot of the clubs. You know, Ajax and Feyenoord don't have a designated goalkeeper till 12s. That was something that really shone through, you know, where specialising goalkeepers are now at 7, 8, 9. And, you know, I know it was one of the things taken back from that when we did our report and presented it back to some staff, and was, right, well, we have our system. I truly believe that, look, if we're going to, goalkeepers now, because people keep talking about the goalkeeper of the future, the goalkeeper now needs to be good in possession. So the goalkeepers that we have with us now in our foundation phase, what do we need to give them now to give them a chance, right, as they move through the ages? So, you know, yes, they need goalkeeping work, as in specialised work. But when you think statistically of how much you use your feet and how much you use your hands and how much, you know, we know how it's like, you know, 7 to 3 every 10 times is probably 7 or 8 times with your feet, twice with your hands. So I'm not saying that all training should be, or all coaching should be heavily weighed that way, but how do we get bulks of passing, footwork, passing, receiving skills, pressurized situations, technical drills, how do we get that in? Well, you can put that on in a goalkeeping context with other goalkeepers. That's fine. We can do that. But like you said, if you go in with the players, it adds an extra dimension, and it adds the pressure of, if the passing practice breaks down on you, that comes into play. So there's that psychological element. The players start to see you as a player, not a goalkeeper. And they also start to understand where you like to receive the ball. And because if they give you it twice one side and you miscontrol it, they'll start to give it in the side, all right, I need to change that. Subconsciously, players figure it out. And I think that's really important. And then it moves into some possession. Now, I've had coaches in our foundation phase now, we try to, and the coaches are being brilliant about this. Look, how can we incorporate the goalkeepers into your passing drills? How can we incorporate them into your possession? Especially in the 9 to 12, because this is the real foundation years. We're really trying to, you know, they're like sponges, they need to. And they've been excellent about it. And they've actually really took it on. They've went, this is great. You know, this is what we want. And I said, you've got to be patient with them. That's key. I think the lads will be patient with them once they're in and around it more, but you will start to see them grow. You'll start to see them get more confident. And as I said, and they talked about, well, do we have them at ends of practices? If we're going to a possession, do we, what would you do? And I said, look, I'm okay. Look, I'm not going to sit and say, we have to do X or Y. We have to do this. We have to do that. No, I said, you figure it out. You know, you put your sessions on. You see what you know, but at some point there has to be an element of pressure. Now, there'll be a thing, well, I don't know if I want them in the middle, but I said, if you put them in a possession and they're in the pitch, they'll gravitate to a side or a corner. They just naturally will, because that's where they play. You might get a really confident young goalie who wants to go and stand in the middle, think he's a midfield player, and play on a half turn, 360, but that'll be few and far between. But most will want to play like on a 180 at most on that like viewpoint. So I said, think about it, that let them gravitate towards it, let them find out, and said, you'll find your goalies then will be much, much different in the games, because they're seen differently by the lads, by the other players. And it's starting to show a little bit now. We've been doing it 12, 18 months, but it's really starting to show. And I think that's really important for the goalkeepers moving through. So when they get the YDP, we're actually in a position of they've picked up on all the things that they needed to have picked up on in terms of position and in depth. And they'll have figured a lot of it out for themselves. Like you talked earlier, right at the beginning of this conversation, where when you're watching something, do you really need to go in and coach? Or is it just a well done? You know, well done. You know, great position. Received it, excellent back foot. Played it out. Had a scan before you received it. All the things that we'd talk to an outfield player about. We're putting that. So it's become the norm. We have to try and make it the norm for them. Not something else. Not something extra. It's just a part of what we do. And the lonely dart is by doing it at the younger ages.
Yeah. 100%. And I think, you know, it's really interesting. So I guess, you know, you talk there about, you know, Ajax and or just in the Netherlands generally, no specialisation around goalkeeping. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think, you know, there is a you know, argument to say, well, do we really need to specialise as young as 7, 8 or 9?
Yeah, well, you know, like you say, they rotate them around, and then the coaches are evaluating over the time frame, and then there is an approach made when it comes to U12s to the parents and the player, and about being the goalkeeper, about being specialised. I think it might be difficult. I think it's also cultural differences as well. I think over there they will. It's what they've always done. If we were to strip it back and start like that now, and then start to do it, you would conversations about, no, I see my son or daughter as a midfield player. Yeah, but we're seeing them as a goalkeeper. We see their super strengths. We see real potential here, and I think because they've done it that way for a long, long time, and they've got such a strong record in development. Me personally, I think that if you can get the blend right of the technical work, but involvement as a football player, then that's the best of both worlds. And I think not specialising completely, but yeah, you're going to be our goalkeeper. We've got experience of it at the moment. We've got a young goalkeeper who does play in goal one week, out the next. But we're coming to a point now where a decision has to be made. We're okay. We've let it roll for a couple of seasons, yeah. But we're now at that point. But
has it worked?
Point will always come.
That has it worked for you?
It has worked, yeah. It has worked.
Which way are the parents leaning?
in goal.
Are you agreeing with that?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's so important, because I think I think it has to be a decision that the player makes as well. I remember having a conversation in a slightly different context with a player recently, about maybe 18 months ago. Player was centre forward. Long story short, then an early growth spurt, dominated it under 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, got to 15s, and now pretty much everyone else is starting to catch up physically. Mm. Whether it was the right thing, wrong thing, I'm not sure, but the decision I made was to have a conversation with the player around, because they were, you know, they felt that it was time where other people were catching up, essentially.
Yeah.
And you know, the conversation I had, based on my experience, was, you can continue as a centre forward, but I'm not sure how high a level you'll get to. But what's more important, playing at a higher level or playing in the position? I think that's a conversation that sometimes needs to happen. And that, you know, you might have players out there, and with this particular individual, they were a centre forward, but I felt they would probably have more joy playing at a higher level as a centre back.
Yeah.
2 years on, players flourished, and they feel like it's the best decision they've made. Which, you know, again, sometimes it's a gamble, right? We don't know these things. We just go off on insights and experiences, and you know, in many respects, intuition to some extent. But I think it is having those experiences out there to recognize those things. And I think sometimes you need to take a chance, just like you've done with this young lad here, right?
Yeah,
let it roll for a bit, see where it goes. Just support them through that journey, because I think sometimes they need to go through that journey with knowing that they've been supported in that, rather than now you're doing this, I'm boxing you in. So I think it's not a one size fits all approach, and I think that's the beauty of coaching, that none of us are necessarily going to do it exact same way. It's very different for each individual that we coach, and the thing that I always go back to is, whatever works for you and that individual, just keep doing that.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you know, I've had experiences of you know, I had a senior goalkeeper who, I was at a senior club in the Football League. We signed a goalkeeper based on what he'd done at his previous club, being excellent, got player of the year. He was out of contract. Fortunately, he chose us. He came to us. He came in. One of the first things he said to me was, do you mind us looking through all my goals from last season that I conceded? And my gut was telling me no, but he was asking me to do it. So yeah, no problem, we'll do that. So we sat down after training, got Y Scout on, get the goals up, and he's starting to kind of dissect some goals and certain things that happened. And there was a common, there was a trend, a theme of Shots from distance, he was really spreading his set, his hands were wide, and he was actually blocking things from 18, 20 yards, which if his set position and hand shape was different, he could probably have caught some of them, but he was blocking, and he gave up two or three goals where he's blocked, it's come back out into play, and they're finished. And but from somebody looking in with an untrained eye, they maybe wouldn't pick up on the fact. If anything, just think, oh, he's made a good save, and so he was going through that, and I'm like, right, okay. So like, what do you want to do then? You know, and he's like, well, I'd like, how can you help me get my set better, get my hand shape better? Right, okay. So we tried a few things with bands and different. You'll have heard all this before. So we did all this, and after a week or two, I'm going, this isn't working. I could feel his frustration, and I just said to him, I said, look, we'll just scrap it, shall we? And he went, yeah, yeah. I said, look, there's something that got you here, and that was how you performed. And I said, I love the fact you've come to me and you're looking to try and get better in that, but I think you've got a real, you've got your own style, and I think this is going to take away from your style. So all the positives that you bring, and I said, I just don't want to take that away. And he was like, no, I agree with you. I was getting frustrated with it. As much as I wanted to try it while I'm doing it, I'm not truly believing it and feel like, well, if that's the case, and I think that's slightly different because, you know, he was a mid-late 20s goalkeeper, where if you're dealing with a young goalkeeper and you spot something, it's a much easier process to implement change because they're at that point where you can change. Really difficult changing a guy in his late 20s. Changing how he looks.
It's still malleable, right? In the sense that they haven't fully got their
profile. I think what happens is with senior goalkeepers, and we talk about, I know earlier we talked about saving shapes and 1v1s and spread box, and there's some goalkeepers who are unbelievable, like they're fantastic, the best in the world. But then what you get is some goalkeepers who are trying to replicate those movements, but they're not physically capable. And so when you ask why you're doing that, they'll say, well, because they do it. And I'm like, yeah, but have you looked at what they're capable of? And, you know, you might be better at something else. So you need to think about that. But what's the best way for you rather than because they do it? So we talked a lot about what does top class look like? What does good look like? So when all of a sudden everyone wants to read, oh, I want to copy what good looks like. Yeah, but I mean, there's not many of them goalkeepers in that bracket that do it that way. And that's probably why they are there.
Yeah.
That's why they are there. It's not because, so I think that we have to understand, and I probably went through it as a player a little bit, looking at goalkeepers playing at the top level. And I know, you know, I played around a lot of lower league and was a squad goalkeeper at the high levels, but I wasn't a number one. And I would look at what are the number ones do differently to me. And I definitely think it was mindset and being able to deal with disappointments much, you know, easier, quicker, better, however you want to frame it. You know, I would hold on to it longer.
Yeah.
So I think it would affect me longer term.
Just on that then, what would have been different for you to feel like you, well, what would you have changed to make it more manageable, if that's the right way to describe it.
Yeah, manageable probably is the right word. I would have, if I went back into that time, the one thing I did notice of top goalkeepers I was around was they didn't really notice or care too much what others were doing. They really focused on what they needed to do. Where I would probably look more at what people were doing, and do I need to do that more? So kind of, I'd probably compare myself to others too much. I think that's...
Where do you think that came from?
I don't honestly know. I think probably, you know, that probably is because you move up the leagues.
Yeah.
No, I didn't go straight into top level football. Right. And then
am I still going to be good enough at this level?
And you go into the first team squad, and then you get your opportunity in the first team, and you get some games. You start to believe you are a top goalkeeper.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because work your way up the leagues, and it's probably mid 26, 27, 28 before you start to get that opportunity higher up. And then you spend so long at a certain level that when you get there, you think, am I good enough for this level? And I think that definitely helps me in my coaching, because when I speak to goalkeepers now, young goalkeepers or seniors, I can talk about the things of coming from a place. My lens was, well, why would I sweat that stuff? Why would I worry about that? Because it didn't bring me anything apart from it detracted a couple of percent away from me. So when I speak to goalkeepers, don't worry about that. Just think about this. If you think about this, this and this, we'll be fine. You'll be fine. Don't worry. You know, you're almost like, I've got your back. Let me take care of all that. You just worry about what you need to do. We'll prepare you properly. We'll get you right. We'll work on certain elements. Try it. Don't worry if you get it wrong, because you're going to get it wrong. It's development. You know, the older you get, it becomes more performance based. But naturally, as you move through, your performance has become more consistent because you're becoming more mature. And you do start to realize that it is about performance. And it's not always about also showing how good you are. It's always about you. It can be about showing how controlled you are. So how do you control your game management things? You know, the elements that come into senior football, when do we bring that into a 21s environment and goalkeeper? I think we have to, because when they go into a senior environment, if they're not prepared for it and ready, that could be, they could be the deciding factors whether they play or not in certain elements. You know, when they're around it, say they go on loan and they've got a senior manager and he's got a young goalkeeper, he's still going to expect to see in a young goalkeeper certain traits that he sees in a senior goalkeeper. And that's why a lot of the time they do go back to a senior, because the young goalkeeper has had a development pathway where certain things were not labelled as important as other things. So I think that's the 21s is really important to, the 21s is really important to start adding some of that in.
It's really interesting, right? Because I don't know whether it's conscious or not, but everything that you say and that you've said so far, you're linking it back to your own experiences. And it does, it just brings up that question again, right? Just how important it is to have played, not necessarily a top level, but to have played. Because I think one of the trends that we're seeing at the moment, right, is coaches almost are getting younger and younger when they're starting out.
Yeah,
they've already decided from very early on they're going into careers of coaching. I mean, your pathway would have been very different to mine. You know, going from being a player, then transitioning into coaching, and probably had some nudges and influences along the way which have pushed you that way. For me, it was, I just love football. I'm not really playing that much anymore. Let me go into coaching to stay in it. Thankfully for me, I look back and I say, right, I did that at 18. I was still playing, still did 7-a-side, 5-a-side, occasionally played 11-a-side, but I did it because I wanted to be, just be around the game.
Yeah.
Whereas I think some of the coaches coming through now that maybe 18, they're looking at it as, I'm going into this because I want it to be a career. I don't know what your observations or thoughts are on that, and maybe some of the challenges and pitfalls that it's creating for those coaches coming in from that pathway.
I would say for a younger coach, don't be in too much of a rush to get somewhere. I think let your journey, your development, take its course. You can obviously help it along in certain ways. I don't say anything negative about that, but don't try and run before you can walk. I think you alluded to it earlier around the coaching licenses, and people just, I want to get through that license and then that license. Why would I need to do the outfield license? I just want to get up. Well, and something, you know, you'll do as a coach developer, and conversations I've had with people on, say for example, on the UEFA B goalkeeping, and you get to the end point of the course and all their assignments, course, everything's done, and they've hit the level, and you're having that positive conversation. And usually, when does the next day of license start? I'm like, well, why don't you think about taking some of the things you've learned and that you've maybe done theoretically and also done live, because we're using goalkeepers that you work with as your project. Why don't you go and live with that for 12, 18 months, 2 years? Develop your skills, because the A license is a jump.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want you to come to the A license and be like, oh, what have I done? I want you to come on the A license and go, oh, this is good. This is what I've been doing. I'm adding to what I've done. And what I'm living day to day.
It's crazy, but I mean, I'm smiling because, you know, you say it's at the end. I just out of curiosity, what I did was, yeah, just for the pure sake of curiosity, I was starting a C license course a few weeks back. I just thought, let me just ask the question. I'm curious, how many of you think about applying for the B license? This is literally the morning of the first day of the course.
Yeah.
We had 28 learners on the course and 24 put their hands up.
Yeah.
And it was just shocking, I think, because, you know, you're right. At the end, that's probably the next question. You know, when's the next B or when is the next A or what? I'm thinking, you've not even started this course yet. And you're already thinking about that. I guess the question and the challenge I'd put to you is, how do we as coach developers deal with that? How do we get them to understand the importance? Because I feel like we'd be banging our heads against a brick wall. They don't want to hear it until they realize it. And I've had it, you know, unfortunately, I've had it with a few times where they've maybe gone from a C license to a B license course, delivered on the B license. And literally for the first 2-3 days of that course, they're thinking, blimey, what have I done?
Yeah. Do they understand development is what I would ask the question.
But they're really here now, aren't they?
Yeah. And they would instantly think, well, that's about players. But you're all students in this room, and you know what? So if you were coaching a young player and they needed help with a technique or a skill or whatever it is, what would you expect to happen? What would be the process?
Mm.
Well, we would start off, we would talk about it, we would show it, we would set some sessions up, we would work on it, we would review it, we would come back to it. There's your B license. That's your B license. That's your A license. Yeah. And once you finish realizing, it doesn't mean that, oh yes, now you're a coach. It means now you have reached a level of competency to achieve the award. And now we move on. And what's the next step? Well, how do you further develop yourself? Is there areas within the course that you thought that was a struggle? That was a struggle. I need to go and revisit that. And that self-awareness and understanding and developing yourself that way. And as coach developers, it's never easy because you've got different personalities coming to a course. Everybody's different, which is fine. Different backgrounds, the male game, the female game, youth development, senior football. We've all looking different ways. But once they're all in that room, they're all the same. And they're all trying to develop and get through that license. And understanding that this is their license. The part that is quite, can be annoying is it's seen as a tick box exercise. I just need to get through this. And I've actually had candidates say that to me. And I'm like, well, if your approach is just to get through it and get it ticked off, you're not actually going to learn a great deal from it.
You're just trying to get across doing what you need to do to get through the award.
Yeah, you want to get through it because it'll allow you to apply for a job or whatever.
Yeah.
Why not go through? Because it's going to take you the same amount of time.
This is exactly regardless. What I say.
So just go through it and do it and learn as much as you can.
And it's going to cost you the same amount of money too.
Yeah, it costs you the same amount of money, same amount of time to get the most out of it. So when you do apply for that job because you have the license, you're in it. When you're being interviewed or you're having a conversation, you can speak with a bit of passion and a bit of understanding about the processes and why you did it. And like, you're not just sitting there, well, I've got a B license or I've got an A license.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's, and you know, I think what they did for me when I went through the license was it gave me that real understanding of framework and process and a big understanding that there is different ways of doing it. Even within the same course, people had a different view on how to approach it and develop it. But we were all trying to get the same outcomes, which is to make them better. And your own personality will come out in that. And your previous experiences, like you were talking there about your experiences of why you went into coaching. My experiences were, well, I love playing, but I knew the day was coming that I'm not going to be able to play anymore. So I want to be in football. I love goalkeeping. It's my passion. So I want to carry that on. And how do I carry it on? Well, I want to coach. And, you know, I've been here, there and everywhere coaching and some fantastic experiences, some not so good experiences, but definitely learned from those experiences and learned myself on how I approach certain situations. And I approach things very different, I would say, than 15 years ago, very different, but that's all a part of it. And that wasn't, that's again, looking back on the licenses. Well, if I just say, well, that's my way of doing it now and that's it. The game evolves.
That's it.
It's constantly moving. So I have to move with it and figure out the parts that, if there's little blind spots for me, figure out which are the which little blind spots and it get better at.
I think the beauty of that is also as well, Tony, sometimes that the bits that you're now working on to evolve might be to keep up with the game now. But like you said, the game is constantly evolving, and although it does evolve, it often doesn't change too much from what we maybe have seen before. So the things that you're strong with now might now come back into benefit to you in 2 or 3, 4, 5 years time because of the way the game's evolved. And I think that bit's really important. And one of the key things that you touched on there as well is about self-awareness and really having a self-awareness. I think one of the biggest challenges I've got for coaches that may be listening to this now and thinking, I'm ready to progress, or I'm, you know, I'm working at a decent level, not necessarily in terms of like your role or, your, or the environment, but how you operate as a coach. The challenge, you know, sometimes is, yeah, but I'm working with BAA licensed coaches and thinking, yeah, but they might have been the BAA licensed coaches that did just enough to pass and not the ones that are continuously developing. So, you know, just challenge yourself and challenge those around you to identify whether that is the type of person you're around. And then, you know, linked to that is that self-awareness piece. What do you, what are you good at? What's your strengths? What are your areas for development? There's nothing wrong with having them because we've all got them. But if you start by knowing what your strengths are and lean on those, you're probably going to be a better coach in the long run, not just for yourself, but for your players. So yeah, just a few thoughts there. And I, you know, I'm conscious of time, but I wanted to kind of just ask you one final question, really, turning it. Again, it's been a fascinating conversation, and which I really appreciate you, you know, sharing some of your experience and your insights. But if you could now go back to the start of your coaching journey and even to that younger self, and maybe be in a position to coach yourself as that 21, 22-year-old goalkeeper, what's one bit of advice you give to that coach?
If I was to think about me as a young goalkeeper, probably give me a little bit more guidance in terms of what it means to be a professional. I think I was catching the back end of where the late 80s to early 90s, where the culture in football was much different to what it is now, but the influence and with players, foreign players coming into our leagues, and that started to happen, and it changed, it definitely changed the view and the landscape. It changed me, definitely, about how I viewed. I knew it was the right thing to do, but it was having the confidence and seeing other people doing it that brought me into it. Didn't have enough of that. And I think as a goalkeeping coach, and you know what, this is nothing against the goalie coaches that took me. They were products of kind of their environment. And but like I say, I always allude back to Simon. I had a number of goalkeeping coaches, some good, really good goalkeeping coaches. A fantastic goalie coach at Hibs when I was in my mid-20s, Ian Westwater. His detail, the way he worked, he was fantastic. It was the hardest I'd worked, but I enjoyed it. It was like there was a real sense of like, and the group was good, which drove it. I think if I was to look at myself starting out in coaching, my first couple of roles, I was basically on my own and learning. I was a player coach as well, which made it slightly more challenging. Well, a lot more challenging because I was the first role I was playing at Vancouver, I was actually in the first team. And my second role, I was like a number two, a cover goalkeeper. So my thoughts to how I did things changed. But I didn't really know. I was planning, I was putting things together based off my past experiences. But it would have been really good to have had someone there for me to bounce off and ask questions and guide me a little bit. Because what you think is the right thing is what you think. And sometimes the goalkeepers don't want to come to, so that's why I think it's really and much better now is the conversations you have with your goalkeepers. It's a two-way thing. You know, it's your development, not my development. So we need to get this right. And you have to be involved in the development, the discussions. There'll be certain things I feel like we really need to do, but invariably they'll say, yeah, I agree with you because I know where you're coming from. And then there'll be something where I've maybe missed the slight, oh, I haven't done enough of it. Ah, right, yeah, we haven't. I've got to get that in this week. There's nothing wrong with those conversations. And if I could have had a bit of that, it might have speeded up my coaching skills, my coaching awareness, maybe. But then I also think I probably had to go through what I went through.
Get to where you are now.
To where you are now. And I'm not saying I know everything about it. I don't. I, you know, there's a lot more people out there know a lot more than me. But I trust in my beliefs. I trust in what I think goalkeeping coaching looks like. And you know, you talk about all the areas that I've tried to get better at and become, you know, evolve with the game. I keep going back with, and I've fought with it a few times over the years. I still believe
X, Y, Z. Yeah. It's so important. But I think the key thing, I'm picking what you said there. And I think the takeaway for me, for anyone to think about, is it's not how long you do it, it's how often you do. And it's the volume of experiences and the reflections involved, rather than I've been doing this for 20 years. Yeah, but you've been doing 20 years, one hour a week. In the same environment again and again. I think, you know, the thing that I say, I always look back at my journey and I say my most accelerated period of growth, if you like, was probably between 2016 and 2018, over like an 18-month period. And the reason for that is I was working in about four or five different environments and I was on the grass about 25 hours a week. Forget match days, just on the grass with the players about 25 hours a week at different ages, different stages, working with goalkeepers and outfield players. So I was immersed in it. And at no other time have I ever felt like I've developed as much as a coach. And I think more recently, I'm probably having similar experiences at the moment as a coach developer, where I'm probably, again, I'm involved in like coach development activity, probably around 25, 30 hours a week. Not really doing much coaching at the moment, but I'm immersed in it, whether it's conversations like this, whether it's having one-to-ones with coaches, whether it's having peer group discussions with coaches, whether it's delivering on course. But I'm fully immersed in it. And I think, like I said, you have to get your time on the grass.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything's going to, you know, again, it's just vary time, challenge yourself. And I think what I was speaking to a past guest, and one thing that he said to me just stuck with me, and this is going back about 3.5-4 years ago now, and he just said, the only thing I look forward to is making sure that I try something different every time I do it.
Yeah.
So ever since he said that, it's just stuck with me. So every time I've gone in to an interaction, a conversation, coach development course, or a support visit, or whatever that looks like, I'm going to do something different, because it's not really going to help me develop. And it might go well, it might not go well. And that's just part of the parcel, right?
Yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah.
And that's it. And I think it's just moving forward in whichever direction it goes. And that's probably the biggest takeaway for me, is like, you know, from what you're saying, is you've had a range of experiences which have brought you to where you are now.
You talked about it there with all the coaching hours, and people talk about things, it takes you to a place. My first role coaching was at Vancouver Whitecaps in 2006 and 2007. And I was player coach, but then in the off season, it's a long off season. So I'm coaching in the day with, I'm taking the sessions and I'm playing. And then the off season's 5 months. And then I was the national teams had regional centres. There was a regional centre in BC. I used to take the 17s, 19s, boys and girls. I took UBC, the University of British Columbia's goalkeepers, boys and men and women. I had the prospects programme and the academy, 9s to 16s. I mean, I was on the grass 8 hours on a Sunday, you know, coaching every age, right through. I was out every evening. And, you know, that 18 months, I would have, if I'd been at home, that was probably about three or four years worth of coaching. Now, don't get me wrong, there was a lot of things. Nobody was over me helping, but I was figuring a lot out.
Yeah.
And when I came back and took a role in senior football back home as a player coach, I was obviously in Scotland, I come into that role, I was much more prepared after those 18 months. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't finished out by any stretch, I don't think you ever are, but I think back to that time and I was like, I was exhausted a lot of the time, but the things I was learning and the things I was picking up, and imagine it going from just being a player where you're just doing your training and you come in, you train, you do your gym, you go home, all of a sudden now prep, plan, I've got 3 sessions today, I've got them goalkeepers in that, I've got a group there, I don't know how many's coming to this one, so I think I'm going to work on this, but it'll depend when they're here, and all the stuff that, and that's the difficulty as well. You know, the coaching licenses, that's why we talked about earlier. Go away and coach. Go and coach before you think about the next license. You know, turn up to a session and everything that you had played, that laid out and planned, isn't feasible. What happens now? What do you do now?
Yeah, you've got to roll with it, man. You've got to be adaptable. And we talk about, you know, this, the concept of developing more skillful players and more effective decision makers. And that's what they do. They roll with whatever's given to them, and they're able to process and respond in real time. That's what makes them successful. So, like, you know, again, Tony, look, it's been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate your time, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, because there's been a lot of talking points, certainly. Massive thank you, Tony. Really appreciate it, man.
No problem. Thanks, Jesse. I appreciate your time and appreciate the invitation. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.